I would rather buy a positive reaction
right.
than to gamble into a reaction that I have no
That's
idea
is That's the key word
coming.
Right there, gamble. Yeah.
That's right.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I am your host, Kyle, and today's guest was brought to us by our friend Joe in Quincy. He's been following Ariel's work for a while now. Actually, I believe he's part of your Market Pulse community. And, man, he says you've got one heck of a story to tell. And I got a little bit of the background when we were doing our pre-call yesterday. But before we do that, how are you doing today? What do you want to be called by, and anything you want to promote or plug before we get like diving into things here?
Yeah, some people know me on X as Real Simple Ariel. I known by my mother as just Ariel, and my fiance by just Ariel, which is you guys can all just call me Ariel if you'd like.
Okay, that works.
But for anybody who does know me on Twitter, I'm the guy with the cute little golden doodle sitting on his lap. So
oh, is that the one I saw running around behind you?
Yeah, we. We've got him laying on the bed here right behind nice. Us. So
I got a cat that tries to jump in every now and then.
That's funny. Yeah, we set up a little bed back here because sometimes at night, you know, when I'm scanning the market and stuff like that, my fiance will just be like, "You're in your office all so long," and I said, "I'll hang a TV,
right.
Throw a bed right behind me, and you can watch TV while I work." So.
Oh, that's for what? I thought you meant that was for the dog.
No, yeah, you know, the dog happens to like the dogs are two. We got two golden doodles, and they both love sleeping with us. So,
oh, that's awesome.
What am I supposed to do at this point?
Right. Well, so tell me a little bit about Market Pulse then before we get going. Like, what are you doing there, and where can people go to check it out?
Yeah. The link is on my bio, on my Twitter profile,
and it'll be in the episode show notes too, if anybody wants to find it easier that way too.
Yes. And really what had happened was, you know, doing an episode with in the Penny Lane podcast or doing an interview with Investors Underground and, you know, just being in the community for as long as I have, and really finding the success that I have in, you know, the last 5 years, just people, one, they kind of gravitate towards my story, kind of like a underdog success story. And we talked a little bit about it yesterday, and I'm happy to kind of touch upon my past and stuff. You know, nothing that I have any shame about. And really, I've got like this insane appetite for the markets and for trading and for learning. And I started as well as a day trader. But, you know, just traders come up to me and would always say, hey, do you take students? You know, do you mentor people? Do you do one-on-one? And, you know, as my trading day winds down and into the evening and I'm just hanging out with my fiance and we're just, you know, maybe clicking away on my phone, answering a bunch of questions. And my fiance's like, you know, you get hit up by a lot of people. Like, is there a way to get them somewhere to, you know, teach and, you know, just kind of share your experiences, teach. I love swing trading. That's kind of like what I've gravitated to most because it, for me, it's the most scalable way of trading. I know guys, and even myself included, you know, you do $10,000 a day. That's great. But at some point you do lose the passion for it because, you know, you can be incredibly consistent and do seven figures a year. And then what happens is you build up a portfolio, but you really don't know how to scale. And money just ends up sitting in your account, you know, because you can't put it all to work on a day trade, right? That's right, just the reality. Like things aren't liquid enough for a guy who's used to maybe scalping small caps or even mid caps, and they're in trades for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and you can't put it all to work. And swing trading for me has resonated more because I realized it's the thing that I can scale my portfolio the biggest with. It's the thing that can get you to 50, 100, 200+ million dollars in time.
It's really interesting, though, that actually that's the reason that you made the switch was the scalability. I don't think I've ever heard anybody mention that as the thing that caused them to move away from futures before. I know we've talked to some people before.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is...
there is an upper limit, right?
Yeah, the reality is, you know, when you day trade, and again, I know guys who are fantastic. You do 10, 20, 30, 50... $100,000 in a day. I've seen it even with futures traders. But there comes a point when some stocks, you know, or the futures markets, they're stuck in a range. And, you know, if you're in a really slow market for small caps, there's no 100% movers, there's no 50% movers, there's no big gap ups, there's no earnings movers in a down market. And if you're like a long bias on, so then I started to say to myself, like, okay, what happens? And this kind of happened to me. You know, once you have a multi-figure, you know, seven-figure portfolio, like what happens when you're accustomed to making $10,000 and $20,000 a day, but you can't scale past that? Like you get bored of trading. You're like, I don't need more millions, right? Like, I mean, you do, you want them, but it's a slow grind to get them, right? It's a $10,000 day and a $10,000 day and a $10,000 day.
But you almost have to get like a nerd to that before you can start to push it. Right?
Yeah. So, but really with swing trading, what ends up happening is my focus is always more on what are the stocks in leading groups, leading industry groups. So if there's, you know, 197 industry groups in the market, what are in the top 30 and 40, right? Because the reason that they're in the top 30 and 40, it's based on relative strength. And when the market goes up 1%, these group of stocks in their individual industry groups are up more than the market. Right. When the market is down, they're either flat or down less. So even if the market's getting absolutely pulverized, you know, stocks that go down less are actually climbing the leaderboard, right? Because they're not being sold off by institutions. And then I started to say to myself, like, okay, when the market is super, super weak, like it's been recently, what are your strongest names? And when the market is incredibly strong, what are your weakest names? So when the market then gives you distribution off of that strength, you've got now a handful of stocks that you can short because then the market gives you a down day, right? Mm-hmm. A 1% down day, a 0.5% down day, a 2% down. And you're already on to a handful of stocks that are weak if you wanted to short. And when the market's incredibly weak, what are the strongest names? Because those are bucking the market trend. And then when the market gives you an up day or two or three, and we can, you know, talk more about the names that I've gotten in recently, like, you know, and it's April 24th for people wondering. Right, 2 days ago, I buy Netflix, right? And it's, you know, effectively breaking back out over $1,000, has a decent reaction to earnings, but the market was like super weak that day, has terrible breath, everything's breaking down, it's a 90% down day, and Netflix was still green on the day. Okay, great. So the next day I come into the market and I buy Netflix over 1,000 and the market's pushing higher. And then the next day, right, it's like Palantir, Trump says whatever he says overnight, market gaps up. I'm buying Palantir over a little flat base at 99 and now that's working and that's been showing awesome relative strength. Mm-hmm. And then the market again, small gap down in the futures market overnight. By the way, I love small gap downs because you're not chasing a gap up in a market that's still below its 200 day, but it allows you to notice the strength of buyers stepping up and stocks breaking clean pivots. Hmm. And now you can really limit risk off of your low day. And today I come in and I buy CrowdStrike and I buy Uber. And I'm only getting more aggressive in the market as what I already have is working.
Are you buying shares or are you buying options?
Shares. Okay. Yeah, shares I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight Greeks. You know, no. I don't want to fight expiration and strike price and decay and all these things that go against you where options are truly designed to go to zero.
But one of the issues with trying to trade stocks, though, I think, is the capital requirements. I mean, don't you need to have at least a 25K account in order to do day trade?
Yeah, if you want a day trade, you need over 25K. Yeah. But if you have a swing trading account, the reality is the market has to pull you in. So if you have 15K in your portfolio, what I always tell people is when I buy a swing trade, I don't buy a position with more than 10% of my account anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the reason that the market needs to be strong to continue to get money from me. So when I buy a Netflix, it's with 10% of my account. The market's been kind of shaky lately. So when I'm buying an Uber and a Palantir and a CrowdStrike, you know, they're with like 5 to 8% positions. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden you've got four names and you've got, you know, 25 to 30% of your money allocated in just 3 days.
What's your typical hold times on these?
So really what I'm always trying to do is I'm a swing and position trader. So I always say I'm a swing trader first and position trader if the stock allows for it. Meaning my ultimate goal is just to recognize a daily setup that I understand, whether it's an earnings gap up, whether it's a high tight flag, whether it's an undercut rally where you could look at like a CrowdStrike, a Spotify, a Palantir, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these stocks, they broke March's lows, but they quickly recovered. Yeah. While the market really got pummeled below March's lows, these stocks, they effectively formed double bottoms, mm-hmm. right? And so you break up, if you look on the daily, you look left, as they say, and it breaks, you know, price structure, but then quickly reclaims, right? And so that's like your first, that's a type of setup. You've got, I use moving averages. So when a price reclaims a moving average, like a 50-day mm-hmm. moving average, that could be an entry tactic. And all of the things that I'm focused on is these are all just different entry tactics, but when do you use them? And, you know, is also half the battle because
right.
If you're buying a tech name and the QQQ is coming down, you're not giving your stock the best chance to work, period.
Right.
But if I buy a tech name and the Qs are going nicely like today where, you know, the S&P 500 is up 2.2 and the NASDAQ's up 2.5, right? You're giving my Uber, mm-hmm. my CrowdStrike, my Palantir, the Netflix, the best chance to work today, even though they were, you know, one I was bought 2 days ago, one was bought yesterday, and two more were bought today. But I'm giving them the best chance to work and push away from my average because the NASDAQ's going up.
You're buying strength on strength. You're stacking strength on strength on strength.
Correct.
You're looking for the strongest names and the strong index. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in the strongest groups in the market, right? I don't say to myself, oh, this one's gotten so beaten up, it's down 60% from highs. Let me get in that one. No, I'll say the market's down 20%. This thing's only down 15% from all time highs.
Right.
Like Netflix is down $100 from all time high. Like we're down 100 from all time highs or eight, you know, like we're right there. And, like the strongest names, they stick out like sore thumbs. Mm-hmm. You know, some people want to short them. And if you're short, you'll be like, this damn thing's not going down. Well, it's not going down for a reason. And that's because the people who can move your stocks aren't pushing them lower. There's not a huge capital requirement. The reality is, you know, there have been swing traders out there who have made millions with thousands of dollars.
So, part of that was me not adapting to when you said swing trading. I'm still in that day trading mindset. I got to switch out of that.
Yeah, with day trading, it requires you have $25,000 because you become a pattern day trader if you do 3 trades over a 5-day period.
What happens if you enter a position and you take a stop then? Like,
and it's one of your trades.
Okay, so you get like, yeah, that's right. You get 3 of those a week or something.
You get 3 of those over a rolling 5-day period.
Okay.
So no big deal. right? Yeah. You just move on. And then again, in a healthy market, like, you know, I got stopped out of Uber yesterday, and then I rebought it today as it reclaimed the 50-day moving average. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, yeah, you get stopped out, but I didn't get stopped out of Netflix. I didn't get stopped out of Palantir. I didn't get stopped out of CrowdStrike. I didn't get stopped out. And they're all I'm holding those overnight. So even if I sell them tomorrow, they're not day trades.
Yep.
Right. So as even when you're under $25,000, you only reserve your day trades for your stop outs.
Yeah.
At low of day or at prior low of day. And I'm always thinking about how tight a chart is. I'm always thinking about what's my risk before I get in, and all these things really matter. And I'm focused on, you know, what are the strongest groups in the market, and then what are the fundamentals of those stocks, right? If they've got great earnings and sales, accelerating earnings and sales, they're in a leading group, as if institutions don't also see that, right? They hire gentlemen like myself to be like, hey, Mr. Bossman, you know, this thing's got 30% quarter over quarter earnings and sales acceleration, right? And that's why they start buying. That's why they start buying. And then when you're in a good group, you know, you can go after them. And it's a little different, you know, if I'm maybe playing some commodity names like gold or silver or energy or uranium names, like I'm buying those off of ascending moving averages. I'm really never buying breakouts in commodity names. Too choppy. And that comes with experience, but effectively, that's what I'm doing in my room is I'm teaching, right? I give a daily watch list. I do a watch list video. I live stream during my trading day so people can ask questions during the trading day. You know, I talk through names that I'm going to be buying or watching, or, you know, what levels I'm watching, and you know, sharing just real-time thoughts. And
it's more about sharing the process and less about call-outs. Like, you're not...
Yeah, it doesn't, you know... I sometimes do alert, like I'll let people know, like, yeah, I just bought CrowdStrike, right? I just bought Uber. But these names are trading, right, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a day. So
are people coming in specifically for that, or is it because you're actually going through and showing, like, here's why I bought CrowdStrike. This is what it did. This is what it saw. This is why I like it.
I believe it's the latter, you know, where people just come in and they don't need another alert service.
No,
that doesn't personally teach you anything. I want to teach people to fish.
Yes.
Right? I don't want to hand somebody a fish and just be like, and if you want to be in there and you just want to be like, I know this kid's bright and you know, I'll just follow what he's doing, fine. That doesn't necessarily bother me per
doesn't
se.
Doesn't hurt you. Just doesn't.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't hurt me. Yeah. But it doesn't. I would rather teach you how to fish so that one day when you're like, okay, I learned it, it's clicked. And then you can just go about your own life and learn how to scan the market, figure out the types of setups that you like to trade, you know, how to size things properly, how to use market exposure, progressive exposure, getting more exposed to the market on the long side as things are working. And inversely, I still have shorts open from February, you know, that were still working. And it wasn't until today, like on one of them that I had in February, NOW, ServiceNow, that gapped up on good earnings and finally knocked me out of the last fifth of my position that I had.
Right.
Right. So it's like I was able to hold it for effectively an entire quarter. Yeah. And they're swing trades, meaning 3 to 5 days, I take some off, I pay myself, I reward myself for catching that momentum burst.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just trail the rest on an ascending moving average, which is why I use them. It takes all of the guesswork out of, you know, how long am I going to be holding this thing? Well, if it's above the 10 and the 20-day simple moving average, don't argue with it. Just let it work.
Right.
If it gets extended from the 50, then I have some rules to start to trim up some more of my position if it gets extended from that 50-day.
Do you use daily closes then for like closing out positions, or do you use hourly? Like what sort of time frame are you looking at?
So if I'm going to kill the rest of the position, a daily close. So write basically a market on close order effectively. If it's going to close below a... you know, 20-day moving average, then I'll kill it. So, but at that point, profits have been taken. Mm-hmm. And I always work on improving my worst case scenario. So for instance, when I bought Palantir yesterday, I knew I was chasing a little bit of a gap up. I bought it just under $100. And I said to myself, if this thing goes to like 103, 104, which is effectively exactly what it did before pulling back, I said, I'll then be using low of day. When I bought it, I was willing to give it some wiggle room down to the 50. Yeah. But I was like, if this thing pushes and pushes well, I'll then set my stop at $98. Yes, this morning it was a little bit weak. It got close to 98, but turned right around, got back over 100, and then even in after hours, it's up another, you know, yeah, it's above 108. So
you let it build some structure then.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned earnings reports, I think, the other day when we were talking, you're going through a bunch of them. And yep. I think you mentioned the, like you review them with the room. Do you do that on your own, or do you use like ChatGPT or AI tools to help you like get through that stuff quicker?
Sometimes both. I don't really use AI tools too much. I'm still kind of a dinosaur when it comes to ChatGPT and Perplexity right. and the others. You know, I'm also an ex-premium, so I've got Grok at my disposal.
Grok's actually not that bad. I like so Grok better than ChatGPT, to be honest with you.
Is it actually?
Well, it lets you do PDFs and things that ChatGPT doesn't do as well, or makes you pay extra for.
That's unbelievable. Something yeah. I actually did not know. But no, I don't really use it to my advantage as much as I should. I know I should just like take the whole earnings report, stick it in there, and say give me the cliff notes.
You're gonna have to train one first before you do that. You don't want to just start.
Oh, like, yeah. Really? No, okay. Yeah. See, you're telling me things I didn't even know. Something that I just do is I'll just read. You know, I just want to know the top and bottom number. I just want to know, did you beat on estimates? You know, are you giving guidance? You know, is it increased guidance? Are you lowering guidance? And importantly than any earnings report is the reaction to the earnings report, right? The last thing I ever really want to do is say, oh man, that was such a crappy earnings report by Tesla, because it was, right? But yet price went higher.
You know why? Yeah, because Musk is coming back to the company.
Right. And so I am not going to just read that earnings report and say, yeah, they're not selling as many cars right. or it's slowing down or be so negative when price is going higher. Because at the end of the day, who can drive price higher? It's not me. Mm-hmm. Right. Even if I buy $1 million position, I can't drive. That's nothing compared to the.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Right. This thing trades, hundreds of millions of dollars a day.
Right.
Right. So I'm not moving the stock at all.
Yeah.
So that's important to remember and never to really argue with price. And one of the, one of the simplest ways to look at it is, is it in a top group or is it not in a top group? If it's not in a top group, then it's because institutions don't really care. The reason solars have done nothing is because they've been in the bottom half of the market for 2 years.
What are you using to find? Are you using like FinViz, or you have a screener that you like?
Yeah, FinViz is a great tool. DeepView is another great scanning software. Scanners that I have, DeepView. There maybe you've heard of the guys on YouTube, Trader Lion before. They do a podcast, educational podcast as well. They've really created like a scanning software for themselves.
Yeah.
And they're traders. So they basically like made, like if we built the software and we had these things on us, what would we want? So they did like a really nice job with that. And FinViz is free. It's perfect. You know, you can just go to groups right there. You'll say groups, you'll click on it, and then you'll have a little drop down screen. You click on industry, scroll down, look at 1 month and look at like the top 20,
you can throw moving averages on there, look at the top 20. Yeah, and then patterns.
Then you go to technicals, and it's got to be above the 200-day. It's got to be above the 50-day. In a healthier market, in a terrible market, you want to know what's just above the 200. Mm-hmm. In a great market, you want to know what's above the 50-day. And then you can go to, if you want to add some fundamentals, some accelerating quarter-over-quarter sales, and then now you're on to names that might have some institutional interest. So if they've got nice technicals and they've got nice fundamentals and they're in the top 40 groups, you're on to something.
Now, what about the sectors themselves then? How are you drilling down into that? Is that something you can do in FinViz? Because the only place I think I've ever been able to do that is on like spysectors.com.
So one of the things that you can do, if you're on your computer, I'll walk you through it.
I'm sitting on it right now, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so go to FinViz.
All right, can you see that?
Cool. All right. So, yep. And so now click on Groups.
Groups.
Yep. And then you're going to see the little drop down right there where it says sector, top left.
I guess I should have
the little drop down, and then click on that.
All right.
Click on that little drop down. And then click on industry.
Okay. Which industry?
So on the where it says group, and then click on industry. And then now scroll all the way down and go down to 1 month performance.
1 week, okay, 1 month. There
yeah,
you
because
go.
I want to know the things that have been strong, right? So now all of a sudden, and if you go to 6 month, guess what else is on there? If you had gone 2 months back, guess what was at the very top? Gold. Mm-hmm. So even in my room, you know, what I was telling traders just 2 weeks ago was gold was effectively the only group that hadn't broken its 50 simple moving average, and the market was just getting its ass kicked.
Right.
And so that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we had gold names on watch. And that week, gold, you know, gold miners, GDX, you made like a 20% move. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like if you were paying attention to the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I didn't tell anybody, you know, Friday, it's like you're a little late to the party, right? In particular with commodities. But then it went higher the entirety of next week, effectively. And then it wasn't until a few days ago when I saw everybody on X. Oh, wow. Gold, 3,500. And there you go. That was the tippity top. So it's like you don't ever really want to be too early to commodities. You don't want to be buying or you don't want to be too early because you could be wrong. But with commodities in particular, you know, buying them off of ascending moving averages is about the best place to buy them if you're going to buy them. Definitely don't chase commodities. You know, retail and institutions have like interest to chase sexy stocks, right?
Yeah.
Tech names, semiconductors, cybersecurity, software, you know.
Right.
Commodities, oil and gas, you know, nat gas. I mean, that's not, they, you play them a little bit differently. They tend to be a little bit more choppy on breakouts. So,
right. There's a lot more news events that you got to watch with like oil. Like there's a lot of inventory reports and things like that.
Yeah, OPEC news and this and that. And, you know, SPR news. And so there's a lot going on there. But really the thing is, and so what you can do even on FinViz is like when you're looking at the 1 month performance or 3 month, you can actually click on it.
Right.
And it will take you, so for instance, like you click on tobacco.
I just clicked on gold, now it's showing me
all the charts. So then you can take it one step further and you can add technicals to it and you can put above 50 SMA, above 200 SMA, and then you can go to fundamental and go, you know, EPS growth quarter over quarter and go over 10%, over 20%. And if it's giving you a big list, you start to shrink it down and you start to say, okay, this is the best technical with fundamental chart in this group, right? And it looks awesome. It's above the 50, it's above the, and then you look at it on your charting software, or on your trading software and say, yeah, that looks pretty good. And then do you have a setup with that that you understand where if you bought it over prior day highs, AKA a breakout, how do you manage risk? How much of something do you buy?
Right.
How do you get yourself involved in the market? But you're on to the strongest groups in the market, and they are the strongest because institutions are buying them. So it's like you've now just, and I don't go looking at the bottom of that list and saying, this has gotten too beaten up, as if I know how much lower these things can go.
No. If anything, you want to do the opposite of what you're doing and thinking that those are the things that everyone's unloading. Maybe those are the ones that you want to continue
to short.
Shorting, right? Yeah.
And because who's unloading them? There's a reason that they're at the bottom half of the market.
Right.
Because the people who actually have shares to unload, institutions, are getting out.
Right.
Right? And so as a swing and position trader, right, they're always just a swing trade at first. But if it just trends and trends for a few weeks, like Netflix is at all-time highs, the real question becomes, if the market put in its low recently and the market begins to uptrend and in 7-8 months we'll go make a new all-time high, or 6 months, 5 months, you're on to the stock already, because I own it, that is at all-time highs already. So at all-time highs before the market's at all-time highs, what do you think this thing's going to continue to do for the next 30, 40, 50 days?
Every single person who's bought a share at all-time highs
bright green.
Is either green or at break-even, at worst case.
Worst case.
Yeah.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what-were-they-thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shape the country without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey It Happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
And so, you know, sitting at 1,019, I'm not leaving, right? I'll trim some into strength, but then I'll let that moving average take over and say, hey, as long as it's above the 10-day, and then the 20-day will catch up beyond my price and say, hey, as long as it's above the 20-day, and it might pull back and find support at that rising 10-day or rising 20-day. And then it'll bounce back up because it's a leading stock and the market's still healthy. And maybe Netflix pulls back with the market and finds support at a rising moving average. Then the 50 eventually will catch up to that level. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, hey, I held that pullback. And then it bounced from there. That's my new stop level, which is well in the money.
Right,
but
right.
I'm not focused on it at all anymore. I'm looking for the next opportunity and the next chart that I understand because I'm trying to get all of my money to work in the market. I'm trying to get it all plus leverage,
right?
You know, trying to get on margin because that's how, you know, and if you can get onto margin, you know, you're in a super healthy environment, right? And so it's really market dependent on whether or not you're going to get all your money to work. So for me, it's the most scalable way of trading. You know, I personally know people who trade with nine figures and it's the only way to trade.
Well, we started talking a little bit about the liquidity aspects of it. You're talking about being able to deploy it, but one of the things I think we kind of skipped over or glossed over, but trying to put an order, like if you try to size up in futures, they get to a point where you can't just click a button anymore and get fills. Like you have to completely change the way that you're trading. Doing it the way you're doing it, it seems like you got a lot higher ceiling before you have to start worrying about like adapting the way that you're trading.
Correct. Correct. And there's a lot of, and for me, there is so many more, right? Like with the NQ, there's only that one product, right? With the ES, there's only that one product. Now, granted, they are very, very, very liquid, but they're super difficult to trade, right? These are some of the brightest minds, you know, they, you know, you're competing against algorithms and all this other stuff. It's like when I'm looking at stocks, I'm just aligning myself with what institutions are doing. And sometimes when they want a stock, they buy it for a quarter. Right, a good earnings report comes out, and now for literally the next
positive earnings drift,
90 days, they're buying the stock effectively. You know, the 60 trading days, or more, they're just buying the stock, accumulating. You know, maybe they don't buy it, and the market pulls back, and this thing gets a little distribution, but finds support at a rising. And you could look at a chart, you know, like ANF or VRT or VST or NVIDIA, and they can just trend above their ascending moving averages for months months. Yeah. And I don't want to argue with that. I just want to get in line with it. And and again, once it's working and I've trimmed and I've done my job, a 3 to 5 day move, I've paid myself, I've sold half. If it goes higher, you know, I still have half. Mm-hmm. If it goes lower, thank God I sold half. So it's like I can sleep well at night no matter what. And I'm always working on improving my worst case scenario, meaning once a stock pushes out and I trim for some profits, my stop goes to break even on the rest. So no matter what, it's a green trade.
What about earnings? Do you hold through earnings typically, or do you try to cut them before?
If I bought on earnings, if I bought Netflix the day after earnings because it acted well, I will hold through earnings. If I bought it, like with Netflix that I just bought it the day after earnings, my plan, if the market shapes up and stays strong and Netflix continues to trend and stays above its 10 and its 20 and its 50 simple moving average, I will hold through earnings as long as I have a big enough cushion, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm already trimmed and it's earned that right. This thing just trended for a full quarter.
But you're not looking to enter like 3 to 5 days before an earnings statement then?
No, correct. Yeah. Okay. I'm not, if I don't own it, I'm not looking to get involved before. I would rather buy a positive reaction than to gamble into a reaction that I have no
idea. That's the key word right there, gamble. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. And trading for me is a career, right? I don't have any other sources of income. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, there is absolutely no gambling in trading ever. You know, and I've gotten to the point where I don't necessarily need to make more. I need to keep what I've made. And that's like very important to my mentality. Mm-hmm. So I treat all of my trades incredibly serious. You know, it's real money. And, you know, yes, I look at things in terms of percentage. But, you know, if I'm wrong, even if I'm losing, you know, 0.2, 0.3, 0.5, it's like meaningful. It's meaningful, real world money.
Right, right.
And I still care about it. So, yeah, I'm very thoughtful of that.
So normally when we talk to traders, like we talk a lot about like the stuff that goes on up here, like the things that you had to fight with to get to where you're at, the things that you had to overcome, the struggles that you had. It sounds like your struggles happened before you started trading, which is kind of a unique thing. I don't think I've ever seen that before, but you kind of hit the ground running when you started trading, but it sounds like you had all the things that you had to work through before that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we can definitely touch on that. So, you know, I was in college and, you know, I started selling pot, you know, got a little bit distracted from school and, you know, I got a little blinded by money. And I had friends, you know, who could get me weed basically. And I was doing drives back and forth from Denver to Chicago and selling pot in my hometown effectively.
God damn, that's a long
and yeah, yeah, that's kind of, that was kind of my backstory. And so I was always
I think you can call it an entrepreneur.
Yeah. I was always kind of an entrepreneur. Like I wanted to work for myself, but I was always bright. But I was using my talents in the wrong place. Like I had to redirect that energy to something totally different, which is I'm very thankful I found the markets. But I finally got in trouble. 2018, I get pulled over, driving back from Denver with a bunch of pot. And I get stopped in Lincoln, Nebraska. I get profiled, right? Just a single male driving with Illinois plates and in my Tahoe, bunch of duffel bags in the back, you know. So I get profiled. I end up arrested. You know, I bail out. And this was in February. In October, I finally get sentenced to 18 months in prison. I go to prison in Nebraska, even though I'm from Illinois. So, you know, I go to Nebraska for sentencing, and I got 18 months. So I'm out there by myself. I'm serving
a prison sentence. It in Nebraska, too?
Yeah, I had to serve my prison sentence. Yeah, because I got sentenced in Nebraska. I got released from the jail in Nebraska. Yeah. I posted bail. Or the bond essentially. Right, so I came back home. My attorney was actually doing like all the preliminary. And then he's just like, hey, you've got sentencing coming up, you know, in October. He's like, you gotta, you know, show up. And I was just like, okay, yeah, that's fine, obviously. So I go to my sentencing, you know, I do take the plea agreement that they give me because I was facing like 5 felony charges, some of them carrying a bunch of time, you know, and it's just weed. Like, and I was guilty, right? Yeah. Even though I felt like I was profiled, no matter what people say about weed, and I believe it to be fairly harmless, it was still illegal what I was doing. So again, it sucked, but yeah, I did go to prison for 18 months, and that time wasn't fun at all. So
was there a struggle to accept that you had broken the law? I think because it sounded like there was a little bit of like struggled accepting that, like maybe you had to work hard to get to that point where you were okay with the fact that you were doing something illegal?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had gotten comfortable doing it, and I had never gotten in trouble. So, you know, you do it, and I remember when I first went out to Denver, and it's like, you know, you got 30 grand, and you know, you get some pot from your friends, and you bring the weed back home, and you sell it, and you make money, and you go back, and you bring it back, and like it was a 15-hour drive, it was a complete pain in the ass, right. But it was money, it was cash, yeah. Right? And mm-hmm. and it was just something that I was able to do. I had my own freedom. I was making then a bunch of money, and you did it for, you know, month after month after month. You would do that drive, and sometimes you know, 6 weeks and 8 weeks, and as you saved your money, you'd go get more. And really, it's just like, I wasn't like selling pot to people who would smoke pot. I was selling pot to people who would sell pot. So, you know, so it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know, like I said, eventually you get too much, and it's not if you ever get in trouble, it's when you get in trouble. And I just thought I was invincible. Cause so many years had gone by and I'd never even been pulled over doing that drive back and forth. And I was just, you know, just thought it was all easy peasy until one day I got pulled over.
Just kind of clicked in my head right here as we're talking through this, but, staying in a trade too long, like overstaying your welcome, like it almost is like kind of similar to that, right?
Yeah. So God, had somebody told me that next month I'd have gotten in trouble, I would have walked away with, you know, my hundreds of thousands of dollars from that little business venture.
But that's almost worth learning that lesson. If you're going to be a trader, like to learn that lesson, you cannot overstay your welcome in the markets. Otherwise, literally, you're going to get hammered.
Yeah, nowhere to put your stop loss. Right. Nowhere to place your, you know, where you exit when you're wrong.
Protecting yourself. It's all about protecting yourself.
But it was a lesson learned. And then, you know, when I got home April 1st of 2020, you know, it was like the COVID recovery was going on. And I had friends who, like, I'd always joke with them, like, I never thought they were the brightest dudes either. Right. And they're making 500 bucks on their Robinhood, 800 bucks a day on their Robinhood, 1,000 bucks. And I was like, wait a second. Like, you guys are morons. Like, how the hell are you two making money on, like, how are you guys making money on Robinhood? Like, and I need some money, right? I had a little bit of cash left over. I had a motorcycle. I'd bought myself a Rolex. Like, I sold my material possessions to fund a day trading account because I was like, if you guys are doing it, I'm going to do it too. You guys are making 500 bucks a day. Like, what are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. And what I realized in 2020 and in 2021 was you could buy any dip on planet Earth and it was working. And, you know, things like sympathy plays were working. And so
I think the joke was you could type in your initials into a ticker and then make money
and buy it and buy it. And it was up 30% overnight. And so in the small cap world, that's kind of what was happening. And so I was just, you know, going nuts day trading. And every single day, you know, my portfolio would get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And one of the things that we actually talked about, doing like the little prep for this, you know, was I ended up getting kicked off of my broker, TD Ameritrade.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So, so what had ended up happening was I probably have, you know, probably one of the hottest starts to any trader's career, in the history of, you know, trading. So I took my $30,000 account, and in the first 16 months, it was like $3.5 million. So, and in that time,
hold on, I'm sorry. Normally it's the other way around. Normally people don't start off that hot, but that's why I think it was important that we talked about the struggles that you had before you started trading. Because I think that that's what makes you atypical. If you hadn't had that experience before just diving into trading, I think you would have had to probably learn or work through a lot more stuff,
I mean,
right?
I agree. And part of where I got lucky was I found, you know, a few traders who were already very successful in trading, in particular in day trading. And, you know, these guys, one of them in particular, you know, was making $20,000 and $30,000 a day. And I was like, well, okay, I can't do that. But his best friend was making $1,800 and $1,500 and $800 and $1,200. And so he would do like this little broadcast on Fridays where he's just talking about, you know, buying a little where it just loses VWAP on intraday, reclaims, and then you're buying that reclaim and you're looking for maybe high a day or ABCD pattern, and you're just like, okay, these intraday patterns. And for me, it's like he would have a moving average on his intraday chart, and it's just like using level two. So when price would come into a moving average and it would kind of like wash out into that level, I would effectively be buying that dip. And then, you know, in 2020, 2021, the tape would like speed up going down. It would kind of like jam, and then it would flick back up. And I was just scalping that little move over and over and over and over. And then all of a sudden, I learned about sympathy plays where it was like AMC and GME were running. Right, and then you would have your Cost and your Express. And I was just market ordering. And one of the things with Toss, part of the reason that I got kicked was they provided what was called midpoint liquidity or midpoint fills. So if the bid was, call it $10 and your ask was $10.10 and I bought the market, they would give me like 10.049 to 10.059. Effectively, you'd have a 10.05 average.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they provide liquidity in the middle. If there's a spread,
that's what they're doing. Oh, geez.
If there's a spread of like 8 to 10 cents, and it's like again, $10 is your bid, 10.08 is your ask. If I click buy, my average is now 10.04.
Right.
Right.
They still do that.
Yeah, they still do that.
Really?
Yeah, they still provide midpoint fills. At least as far as I know, from people who use it. Hmm. So they provide liquidity and I would then market, like 2,000 shares, and just keep doing that. And I would then have like, you know, 20, 30,000 shares as my account got bigger. And then what I would do is I would then start to buy the ask. So I would have the 10.04, and then I would start to buy 10.08 and take out that 1,000 share wall. And I'd be buying 10.09, 10.10, 10.11, 10.12, 10, all the way to 10.15. But my position size would only increase like 10,000 shares on my 20,000 shares, and my average would go to like 10.07.
Right.
Right, 10.08. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the bid starts to fill in that if the bid got to 10.08 and the ask was 12 or 10.16, 10.18, 10.20, I could technically start to market out and they would provide me midpoint liquidity.
Wow.
Meaning I could get that 10, right? And I figured that out and I was just like, okay, infinite money glitch, you know, like what is going on here? And I did it with in sympathy plays in like areas of the market where you would get your lead runner and it could be even when like the NFTs were running and you would have like TCAT and I would start to hammer away on DLPN. You would have like LEDS moving and I would start buying MOSY and WISA. You would have AMC running and I'd be buying COS.
Right,
You would have, you know, even when you had like and one of the things that I realized was this was common, right? You would have Tesla going. And it wasn't ever just Tesla moving alone. It was then, back then, you had Lucid, you had Rivian, you had Solo, you had Candy, you had Li, you had Neo, you had XPEV. Yeah. You had all these other crappy EVs, but you had your leader going. So it's like, if your leader's going, then it would trickle down to what's your next largest company, and then your next largest company, and your next, all the way to if Tesla made a big enough move, the most dog crap one of them all would be moving,
right?
And I would be the one moving it, right? Until, so I did that over and over and over, and eventually my broker one time, you know, they call me and they're like, you know, we call this toxic order flow, and you know, it's just market makers weren't happy, and that's fine. You know, another thing that they used to do is if I used to place a bid, somebody would come in and jump my bid. Then they would play. I would place a bid. Then they'd jump my bid. Then they'd place a bid. And they'd jump my bid. And if they kept jumping my bid, I'd do it just until they got to where my average was, and I was able to mark it out, and I'd be a green trade. So I just did it, you know, ruthlessly. Yeah. And when I noticed in 2021, at the ends of 2021, at this point, you know, I had already made several million bucks, and I started to struggle a little bit. I got booted from TD Ameritrade. I went over to a broker who didn't provide midpoint fills, and I would mark it in and I'd be getting filled on the ask, and instantly if I bought 10,000 shares and the spread is 6 cents, I'm looking at $600 red. And I was like, oof, you know, like even when you've got millions of bucks, like you'd be losing, like money just leaking.
Did you know what was going on at this time? Like, did you understand that you're getting midpoint filled, or did you have to go back and figure that out after you made the switch?
No,
I
realized my fills were terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
right when I got to the next broker, I was like, I'm going to be able to do this anywhere. I'm going to be just fine. When I got to that broker who wasn't providing midpoint liquidity, I realized right away, like, my fills are crap.
Right,
like,
right.
No other way to put it. They're, you know, dog poop, right? So I was like, you know, and I'm instantly
staring at red. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, okay, so that is when, you know, I was like, okay, I don't want to lose the money that I have, but I've got, I got respect for traders, but clearly what I have figured out to do on my own isn't a real way of actually operating in the market. And then that's when I started to study, you know, people that I have massive respect for, guys like a Mark Minervini, a Bill O'Neill, Stan Weinstein, Dan Zanger, and just started to, like, some of them I joined their platforms themselves. Yeah. And started to say, what are they teaching? How have they had 20, 25 years of success? Can I take what they're teaching and implement it for myself? 2022 was obviously pretty tough, but I did learn shorting during that period, which I'm very thankful for tough periods, because right. If you are consistent and you learn, and that was actually the beauty of, you know, having done so well in 20 and 21, it allowed me to, like, slow down, learn. And then, you know, when the market started to turn at the end of 22, although I learned shorting, which it wasn't like a big source of income, you know, when 23 turned and I had learned all these concepts from a Dan Zanger, you know, technical patterns, using progressive exposure, yeah. you know, proper sizing, being in the top 40 groups in the market, how fundamentals play into, once I started to, like, put all the pieces together and then do it for myself, I was like, okay, this makes tons of sense. And then really from there, 23 was a cinch, 24 was way better. You know, I was prepared for the downturn, you know, going into 25. And one of the things that has really helped me was just making sure that I'm ebbing and flowing with the market. And what I mean by that is, since I am comfortable with shorting, mm-hmm. when the market gets a little extended from its own moving averages, like in November, December, January, and we're kind of getting distribution days and get a little V-shaped recovery and ugly distribution days, when the market has gone up a bunch, I start to say to myself, what are the weakest stocks, aka what's gapping down on earnings, you know, what's breaking key moving averages, what are the weakest groups in the market? For instance, semiconductors was one of those. Mm-hmm. As much as people love NVIDIA, right? The reality was, look at what happened to AMD over the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Right? Look at what's happened to ACLS and Rambus and KLAC and LRC. They got destroyed.
Intel,
right? They've gotten murdered, but everybody's just so focused on what NVIDIA is doing, you know, and CRDO and TSM and, like, four of the stocks. When, if you go back to 23, I could ramble off 25 names in the group that did awesome. Mm-hmm. But then as you got to ends of 24, right, half of the group had gotten destroyed.
Right.
We got the little yeah, guys running out.
I saw him walk by.
So that was the thing. It's like you start to get, you know, a group that's breaking down. And so when the market is very strong, what are the weakest names in the market? And when the market is really weak, what are the strongest names in the market? So if I want to go long, I want to be long the names that are showing relative strength during times of weakness. And if I want to go short, I want to short the names that are showing relative weakness in the times of strength. And so that way, when the market does give me a down day and I take a short and the market is just fading all day long, 1%, 1.5%, 0.8%, whatever, I'm giving my weak stock in a weak group the best chance to push away from my average. And then I become a swing trader in that thing. I'm looking for a 3 to 5 day fade. I cover half my position. Continue to trail the descending moving average. And inversely, when the market is coming off of weakness, right, and I get long Netflix, Uber, Palantir, CrowdStrike, and the market then starts to turn up, these names were already showing relative strength. So guess what? The minute that the market pressure lets off, these mm-hmm. names are off to the races, and now you're up, you know, 6% right. on one, 8% on the other, 3.5% on the two you bought today. And now I'm operating from a place of strength in my own portfolio. And then it's just effectively managing risk against lows when you buy. But then after you get a push, improving your worst case scenario, and my stop now goes to flat. So it's like I'll take a ton of small green trades, a ton of small red trades, a bunch of flat trades, never any big red trades. And the home runs make up for the rest.
Yep, yep.
So
last question I got for you then, because looks yeah. like the dogs are getting a little antsy.
No, this girl, she's doing this so she can lay down here in a second.
Ah, okay. No, I was just going to ask about the experience levels of the people that you work with. Do you prefer to have people with, like, a couple years into their journey, or do you prefer to, like, start with a blank slate and somebody who's never looked at a chart before in their life?
Blank slates are great because they've got no predispositions about how anything works.
No
in the
scars.
Market,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
And I remember I worked with a cousin of mine, and he came, you know, to my home, and he sat next to me, and he was just like, you know, what exactly are you doing? How are you doing it? And he had no real idea. Mm-hmm. And he was able to make 100% on his portfolio last year.
Right.
And so I love working with people who have no predispositions, but The thing is that there are people who've got a few years of experience in the market, and when I say something, they catch up onto the terminology a little bit faster. They understand what I mean about proper position sizing. Hey, little lady.
Look at that.
Would you lay down, please? So they've got no predispositions about how things work, and they are easy to work with because they don't know. But again, even a trader of like higher level who's been like, I've been a great day trader my whole life, and I just am trying to make the transition because it is more scalable. Mm-hmm. I love working with them too. Yeah. You know, it's just a mindset adjustment that really needs to be made. But the reality is it can be done. You know, for me, it's the easiest form of trading. The market has to pull you into whatever side it is that you're trading right now. I'm more long biased because the market's gotten beaten up and I'm starting to see follow through, right? You don't see stocks hitting all-time highs like Netflix if you're in a completely bad environment. Right, inversely, right. You would say if the market were to continue higher, there's your potential leader. One of your, you know, quote unquote Mag 7 stocks at Mag 8, you know, is you know, at all-time highs. So, really, to me, all levels is awesome. I love just talking markets with anybody, new, old, you know, seasoned, and anything in between. It's just because I love it so much. So in terms of people who are in my group, I feel like it's eclectic, right? It's like people who are just like, hey, man, I like what you're doing, and I want to learn more about that because it's like you make it sound easy. And it's like it is when you put in, you know, 10-hour days like I do almost every single day.
Right,
and
right.
It's like, yeah, I've already made money, but I still love it so much that I'm going to put in another 10-hour day tomorrow. So
right, exactly. Well, I think that's probably about as good a place as any to call it. But, man, thank you so much for your time today, Ariel. And thank you, Joe, for suggesting, for getting us in touch here. If you guys want to say thank you or check out the stuff that he's doing, you can do that at whop.com/marketpulse, or you can click on those links in the show notes. Also, I think that's in your Twitter bio too, right?
I'll make sure I
link that as well. Yeah, all that stuff will be in the show notes, so please click on them. I'll be back soon with another exciting guest that's vetted by our community. But until that day, please like, share, subscribe, all those things, and have a green week.
Thanks, Kyle.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.